is going on, everyone? It is yet another edition of One on One with John Alba here on adfreeshows.com. Coming to you every single week. You pick it up early on AFS and yeah, you know what to do from there. Audio, video, all the goods, adfreeshows.com and AFS on youtube.com. We've been going back and forth. We've had some legends on, we've had some popular figures on, and I always like mixing the past with the present and digging into the influences from the past on the present, which is why for one-on-one this week, we bring in one of my favorite acts right now on the indies. His name is Kevin Koo, and he's hopping on one-on-one with John Alba right now. Kevin, what's cooking, my man?
How you doing, John?
Dude, I'm talking to you as we take the Monday night. This is a good way to like get a Monday night going here. I'm really appreciative of that. I hope your new year is treating you well. How's everything been holding up?
Really good. I did the restival shows and I had like, what, three matches in like 2 days span. So my body was a bit beat up. So I just came back from a wedding and I just got to hang out and chill and I'm feeling good.
Kevin's been all over the place over the course of the last calendar year, just wrapped up a run in MLW. A lot of you probably familiar with him from his work there with Team Filthy, also Violence Forever with Dominic Guarini. You're killing it, my man. You just said that you were working on Restival, which was at the end of the year in New England. I feel like the grind right now for indie wrestlers, especially with TV exposure and streaming platforms, it's unlike anything that the industry has ever seen before. Do you feel any effects of that?
Like physically, yes. I feel like I have had a rather hard schedule this past year, especially with Dom being out like half the year. So I was just like a singles guy for like 6 months, which I loved. And I got to really like sink my teeth into who I was as a professional wrestler. But again, that was like just me. So it was just like really heavy on my body. But I try to keep up with like different types of like physical therapy and stuff like that, just to like curb that. Mentally, it is also really tough just because I am such like a homebody. So I enjoy just like my time at home, like just chilling on the couch, playing video games, or like just making good food. But yeah, I honestly, it's cliche to say, but I wouldn't trade it for anything just because like I talk to my regular friends who like aren't in pro wrestling or don't know much about it. And they're like, man, you're really doing something that like you wanted to do as a kid. So you're like living a dream and that's really admirable. And I'm like, yeah. I never really sit down and think about it because I'm just doing it so much, but I'm like, that's really cool.
Well, the journey is a big thing that we focus on here on One-on-One with John Alba. And your journey is really unique. And that's why I wanted you to come on and chat with me here, because you kind of found yourself living two simultaneous streams between pro wrestling and music. And that's something that we're going to get into here, but you just said that your friend said, hey, you're living a dream. So what did that dream look like at an early age for you?
Honestly, like, so everyone pretty much like watched wrestling when they were a kid at some point or another, I feel like, but they were like weirdly embarrassed to say it or admit it to a lot of people. But I had like a really cool core friend group when we watched wrestling when we were younger, but it was never like a thing where I was like, man, I'm just really going to do that when I'm older. I wanted to be like a marine biologist and a historian when I was a kid, which is weird to think about now. But as I like just started doing more stuff, I was like trying to figure out who I really am as a person. So like after that, after like middle school, high school and stuff like that, I really started to like sink my teeth into music. So I pursued that for a good long while, but it was just, I found myself not as happy, you know? And I'm real big on like, if you're doing something, be happy doing it. And if you're not, just go, you just gotta go. But then like the opportunity of wrestling came about because I was living in Boston at the time. And it was just kind of like a thing where my friend was like, you should give this a try. Like, just do it. I was like, you know what? You're right. I really have no reason not to. And it was just like always in the back of my mind. Like if I don't do it now, I'm probably never going to do it. So I might as well just try.
So you're growing up, you're a wrestling fan, but you don't want to outwardly admit it. So like while you're kind of covert in watching pro wrestling, who are your guys growing up that maybe find their way into an influence with you today?
I mean, when I was super young, it was like the Attitude Era was so massive. So it was like the Stone Colds and the Rocks, the world. And then like I would see like Owen Hart and Bret and just like the like nitty-gritty pro wrestlers who like really got into the technical aspect of it. And I really enjoyed watching them for the side of like the athleticism of that. But then like, you know, Stone Cold and The Rock was obviously great because they were such like larger than life characters, and that's what you grab onto when you're a kid because you're like, well, these guys are crazy. Like he's, you know, shooting the bird at like his boss, and I want to do that to my teacher at some point, but I know I'll go to detention if I do that all the time. So, you know, I feel like I have different stages of my career, right? Like when you first start, you think about just learning the basics and like who does influence you at that point. So when I first started, I think I really started to like take influence from people I saw on TV because that was like the ultimate goal when I first started, I guess. But then as I started to like get more into it, I started diving deeper and deeper into indie wrestling. And like in 2006 or something like that, I started really watching Ring of Honor because that's when they're on HDNet. And one of my buddies had HDNet for some reason or another in his cable package, which was great. So I could really watch all Ring of Honor. And that's when I really like, as I started going into more like indie shows and stuff like that, I was like, oh, this is what I gravitate towards way more now. And like, it's not a secret, like from anyone that has ever talked to me, that like Bryan Danielson is my favorite wrestler. And that's what I pattern a lot out of my career after.
We're going to get into Bryan Danielson a little bit then, because his influence certainly shines through your work in certain ways. But I was curious as to finding out who some of those influences were, because for those who haven't watched Kevin, it's a very unique style that he and his tag team partner Dominic Guarini work with. But especially Kevin, it's a lot of rapid strikes, karate slash MMA based move set. And then, if I'm not mistaken, you did Olympic powerlifting too. Is that correct?
Yeah, so like when I started with MLW, like, hey, we need like blurbs about you to put on a website. I go, well, like, I mean, I do Olympic powerlift, like Olympic power lifts and or Olympic lifts and power lifts in my workouts, but I never did it
Okay,
for
you didn't
like
do it.
the
You didn't do it
Olympics.
competitively.
And they're just like, oh, okay, we'll just
We're
tell
gonna
everyone
run
you're
with
an
that.
Olympic. Yeah, I was like, oh no, please don't. So everyone's like, wait, were you in the Olympics? I go, no, I just do the lifts in my workouts. Like, I know
Gotcha.
how to do them properly.
Okay. Well, but even so though, I know that karate and strikes and all that, that's a really big part of who you are. And I think it's really important. We've talked about this on one-on-one with other guests that like standing out in pro wrestling is really important if you want to make a name for yourself because you need to be different. So how does that style make you different?
I think that I'm more like ground based in pro wrestling. So like when people watch me, they'll see me do like a kick or like a chop or a forearm or something like that. And they're like, oh, that's like he's hitting them, you know? And so many fans are like smartened up to wrestling now, I feel like, where they're like, oh, I know all about this. This is like, I know what's happening there. This is fake, such and such like that. But I'm really big on if I can take them out of it for like 10 seconds, that's my job done. And I feel like that's what I really excel at.
One of my favorite interviews I've done on this show was with Daniel Garcia, someone that you know very well, currently signed to AEW. And we were talking about style, and he mentioned that his favorite type of pro wrestling is where he can convince the audience that he is in a real fight for his life. And there's a reality that is embedded within it that makes for a really special dynamic for storytelling. How does that translate into your personal style? Because I feel like there are similarities there. And what was it like working with Garcia? You guys had a huge match, WrestleMania weekend this past week, that kind of caught the whole internet by storm, last year rather, I should say.
Yeah, I think me and Daniel have like really similar mindsets as far as pro wrestling go. And we like when I saw him a lot of indie shows, we had tons of conversations about it, like just the current state of indie wrestling, like where everyone is, where we are. So I completely agree with him, and that's how I kind of perceive pro wrestling, that it's two or you know, in a tag team setting, four competitors inside of a ring, and you're trying like one side is trying to win. There's always the opposition, and if it makes it seem like it's more of a competition and a fight, I think that that's so much more relatable to an audience, and they watch that more intently than if it's just like a 4:50 or 6:30, like in one spot, you know. And I'm not bashing those, because those are awesome, and I can't do those whatsoever. But what I've found that I'm really good at is being able to capture the audience for a competition.
Sure. And listen, personal preference wise, I agree with you entirely. And that's kind of how I like to consume pro wrestling. But I want to bring this up because I feel like it's worth attacking the concept of it all. You're saying that that's something that audiences will relate more with, but simultaneously, you look at the golden age of pro wrestling, you look at the Attitude Era even after that, you're not seeing a lot of guys who are fighting in that style. People are identifying more with Macho Man Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior and The Rock. So how do you find a way to create a balance of all that stuff?
Sure. I mean, like, I think pro wrestling is in a very different spot than it was then, right? Like, yes, the casual fan, if you say Macho Man Randy Savage or The Rock or someone like that, they're like, oh, I know that as professional wrestling that I watched when I was a kid. But I think that everything needs to evolve, right? So obviously with AEW, they do all kinds of styles, but they have signed a lot of like tentacle and grappling based wrestlers. And I think that there's so many more applications for that, because those types of wrestlers can really adapt to any style, in my opinion. But from what I've seen, if it's like a higher flying type of person, sometimes they can't always adapt to like maybe a luchador, or like, you know, the high flying luchadors or the ground based luchadors, or just like sometimes they can't even adapt to grappling because that's just not what they do and what they train at. But I think that as a grappler, I can ground someone down and just really grind on them.
Is there room though for so many grappling based performers in today's scene? And even if there is, how do you personally make yourself stand out from them? Because you've had a ton of success. You had a great year on the independents in 2021. MLW is legit TV experience. So how do you stand out?
I would love to say that there is room for everyone, but we all know that there is not room for everyone. There's a very finite amount of space to make professional wrestling your living. It's hard for me to really talk about how I really distinguish myself from people, because I just go out there and do my thing. But I think that when I really sit down and think about it, I think I distinguish myself because all my matches are different. I take influence from like MMA, pro wrestling, from every era. And I try to keep up with what's current. So I watch professional wrestling all day, every day. Like, I was literally just watching shows right before I got on the call with you. So people always say tape watching, tape watching, tape watching. But I feel like some people only watch one thing, but really there's an entire world of professional wrestling. Like, from Japanese wrestling, I've tried to figure out if there's wrestling in like Korea, where I'm from, India, like everywhere. There's some type of pro wrestling everywhere. And the nice thing about the internet is you can find it. So that's what I've really tried to do.
Well, on ad-free shows, we're obviously, given our clientele and our talent, very much based in that nostalgia era of pro wrestling. And you mentioned who you watched growing up, but now that you're on the other side of it and you're watching tape, are there any favorites from, say, the Attitude Era that you look to for influence on your style of work?
I think that where I'm a little bit weak is my projection as a person, you know?
Let me tell you something. I'm not trying to cut you off there. I apologize. But projection is everything in pro wrestling. And I've learned that too from just doing my indie work. Even my second promo ever that I cut, there's this grizzled old vet in Brewer, Maine that pulled me aside and was like, kid, when you take the microphone, project, because you're not just speaking louder, you're projecting confidence. And I'm like, huh, okay. little light bulb moment. So I'd like to hear more about that from you, why you struggle with projection and how you've looked to try to improve on that.
I was a very, and I still am very much an introverted person. That's just how I grew up. Like I had friends, but they were very much a core group of friends where I went, like, would go skateboarding or like go to punk shows or hardcore shows. So it was just like, I knew that world and I never really had to speak to large audiences. Like even playing in bands, I could kind of like have a facade, you know, like in wrestling, I kind of have a facade because I'm essentially half naked and just like fighting people. So I don't really have to think about like public speaking. Right. So that's, I realized that that's one of the holes in my game and I recognize that. And I've really been trying to get more comfortable, even if it's just like when I walk out talking to the camera or like when I leave talking to the camera or just like talking in the ring in general. I'm really big on vocalizations and noises while I'm wrestling because everyone's on their phone, you know, no matter what, someone's going to be on their phone. But if they hear me say something, they're like, wait, what did I just miss? So I try to keep that going the entire time. So like I try to really, the Attitude Era is really good for like big talkers, right? So I think that I have somewhat of an abrasive personality sometimes. So like Stone Cold was really big on my development of that, where it seemed like he wasn't like talking as Stone Cold Steve Austin. It seemed like he was just talking as the person he is, and he was just projecting that to a wider audience. So that's what I struggle with and I'm trying to get better at. Instead of like playing a character, I just want to be projected as the person that I am.
I think sometimes it's a stigma in wrestling where people are like, oh, well, you pulled that from Stone Cold Steve Austin. You pulled that from Ric Flair. You pulled that from The Rock. I don't view that as a bad thing. I think even in the world of pro sports, like if you're not looking to the past for influence, how can you evolve the future in the process?
Right. And it's like, you can do these things without, you know, blatantly ripping these people off. Like,
right. Yeah.
And there's some people that do just blatantly rip them off. And I think that's where it gets the bad stigma where like, oh man, they're just trying to just be just like them. But there's little things that people appreciate, like little Easter eggs that you can, you know, put in different promos. Like CM Punk's great at that. I think he's one of the best at just like putting little Easter eggs from his personal life to his wrestling life to all that. Like I'm obviously really a really big punk kid, so I hear all of his like punk, like a punk band influences that he puts in his promos, and I think that's really cool. But that's him. That's what he likes to do, and he's very, very good at it. One of the best in the world at it. And I don't think that it's really matchable to anyone that I can really think of, just because there hasn't really been like a punk influenced person so outwardly like he was.
Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about your punk music after this, because I think punk and rock and roll and pro wrestling have so many parallels ultimately at the end of the day. And I want to talk about that with you, but real quick on the influence stuff, you recently moved to Nashville, correct?
I've been here for like 3 years now. Yeah.
3 years. Yeah. So have you ingrained yourself at all in the Tennessee wrestling stuff? Because that's a hotbed back in the day, Jeff Jarrett, a big part of ad-free shows. Have you looked back at any of the Tennessee wrestling era?
Yeah. Even before I moved here, I always heard of like Saw Wrestling and like the old Stadium Inn days and stuff like that. So every once in a while, I'll catch some of that stuff. Honestly, I haven't really dove too deep into it, which I am kind of ashamed to say, just because I've lived here for so long. And I do pride myself on being a Southern wrestler, right? Like I always bill myself from my hometown of Birmingham, Alabama. And I try to do my best to represent that stuff, because I think that there's a large stigma against Southern wrestlers. And I know this for a fact, because I've heard people say it to me, that they just don't think that Southern wrestlers can keep up with the modern type of wrestling or the modern audiences. And I think that's totally false.
Why do you think there is that stigma?
I think it's just because they still see it as like, you know, the like the hillbilly Memphis style, where it's just like it's just a bunch of like Gaga and bullshit that mm-hmm. like they can't really just like keep up, because the modern style of wrestling is really like more fast paced and, you know, grounded. And you know, Memphis wrestling was all about walking and talking. So I think that that's what's really against him. But there's so many Southern wrestlers that are proving them wrong. Like me, Adam Priest, Cabana Van Dam, like so many people out there, Ashton Starr, AC Mack. Like AC Mack is a great example. He's really good at talking, but he can go in the ring with anyone.
Yeah, and I was going to say the whole walking, talking thing of Memphis wrestling, you know, that's not a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot of amazing characters that came from that. And we actually talked about that on ad-free shows. Myself and Jeff Jarrett did a sidebar on Memphis wrestling in addition to our conversations with Conrad with Jerry Jarrett that you all can check out on adfreeshows.com. Of course, nice fluid plug there. But I highly encourage you to check that out, Kevin, because there are, and so many of the names you mentioned before, the Stone Cold Steve Austins, I mean, those guys all had the Steiners. They all came through Memphis and Tennessee wrestling at one point or another. So the influence is very much there in that sense. And then you ended up finding your way over to MLW. You just recently wrapped up your run there. What was your takeaway from your time in MLW? You know, that's a spot that a lot of people are starting to hit as kind of a testing tool to see if they can cut it on a TV program and are adapt to TV wrestling. How was that experience for you?
It was a bit weird. So I signed my contract literally a month before the pandemic started. So my first show was supposed to be the first show that got canceled when everything shut down. So my first tapings were in the closed studio in Orlando to literally no one. So it was interesting because we could do like different cuts and do like different matches where like we didn't have to like adhere to just like a time limit of being in an with an audience, because obviously with like those tapings you want to keep it strict because you don't want the audience to be there for like, you know, 6 hours and just die by the main event. So it was really interesting to like really hear like Court's really great. Like I can't talk anything bad about him because he's helped me so much, and he was just a really good boss where I could text him an idea or ask him for feedback and he'd just get back to me right then and there. And it was always just, it was never like him talking down to me. It was always him trying to tell me what I could do better. And I really appreciate that because I feel like so much is just like, yeah, you did good. But I'm like, no, tell me what I did bad. So I know what I can do better and get better at in professional wrestling. And then I did the first ECW Philly tapings. And that was amazing because that was the first time in front of a crowd for MLW. And I could hear the Court talk to the ref to convey me things that I was like, oh, wait, I have to think about this other stuff while I'm trying to wrestle at the same time. Like, it was a bit of an overload, but it definitely made me a better wrestler as far as like an independent level, because I could think about and translate like projecting wrestling wise to a larger audience on the independent level.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think about those little intricacies, the differences between TV wrestling and your standard independent show. What was something that you struggled with and how were you trying to overcome that?
I think it was a lot of like playing to the cameras. I always knew, like, everyone asked, where's hard cam, stuff like that. But that's just one thing. Like you worry about the Roman cam too, because that's really where they get you. That's where it's face to face. And that's like the money shot, I guess. So that's where I try to focus sometimes now, where like I'll put like a submission like over here where it's like really can get a Roman cam shot or something like that. And then like I talked about earlier, like I'll come out, say something to the camera, or when I leave, I'll say something to the camera. And I think that that's something that's a little bit amiss with a lot of people who haven't necessarily had the opportunity to work like a TV product where the indie wrestling is just like, just go in the ring and do your thing. Worry about hard cam. Here's your pose. All right, good to go. Bye. And even like entrance wise, like you like I always heard like sit there for five count, do your pose for your little lower third, then you're good to go. Do something there. Don't just like rush right out.
March
because
out.
Then, yeah, because then who like the camera can't see you. They can't put over the commentators can't put over anything if they're talking before the bell rings. Like I was like, man, I honestly never really thought about that. Most of the time I would just like do my entrance, march to the ring. All right, here we go.
It's such an industry of the little things. The little things accentuate products so much more than people even realize perceptively on the surface level. You mentioned working the ECW arena. What was that experience like for you? Do you pull any influence from any ECW guys these days?
Man, that was absolutely bonkers. That was my first time doing it. Like, I know a lot of people have done like indie shows there, but I've never wrestled there until then. And it was like, I think we had like 5,000 fans there for the first show. And I was like, oh, this is a thing. So like, I was able to just like kind of soak it in for a second, because we did a promo starting the show with Tom, and Kit was with me. And I was just like, I could just like kind of sit there and be like, yeah, this is awesome. But I think like, I don't really pull a ton of influence from ECW wrestlers. Like, I'm really big on Tajiri. I think he's awesome. Like, him and Super Crazy's feud was one of the best things. I go back and watch those matches all the time. And then he actually did a taping with MLW that I was at. And I was like, this is crazy meeting you here.
Did you have any conversations with him?
He speaks not great English.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he might, you know. I've found a lot of like foreign wrestlers lead on that they don't speak as much English as they actually do. And it's funny because my dad does the exact same thing. He's from Korea. So sometimes when he like doesn't really want to talk to someone, he'll just kind of act like he doesn't speak English, but that man speaks perfect English.
He's ribbing.
Like, I know what you're doing. Exactly. Exactly. So like, I just said briefly hi and like really nice to meet you and stuff like that. And then, you know, he had to do his match and stuff like that. Mm. But yeah.
Well, I'd like to talk about that real quick then. Being a Korean American in pro wrestling, that's not something that's super common. And that has to be some sort of a badge of honor, I'd imagine, for you. How much does that play into your journey here?
I'm very proud to be a Korean American. Like, I'm a first generation Korean American. Like, my sister's from Korea. She moved here when she was like 9 or something like that. But I was born in Marietta, Georgia, and just grew up in the South. And I've really tried to find like my roots, I guess. And I try to put it out there a little while ago, like how many Korean American wrestlers are there, or Korean wrestlers, in fact, that have ever been signed to like a contract or have been really shown on TV a lot. And there wasn't a lot from what I could really research or gather. So I really try to project out there that I am a Korean American, or I am Korean. Like, I have a little flag on my tights. Every single set of tights I have, there's a Korean flag on there. So I try to really remember who I am and where my family came from.
Why is that representation important in pro wrestling?
I think that things get so missed, especially now. Everything just becomes mashed up. You know, it's just like, here's wrestler A, here's wrestler B. But there's obviously more and more like more representation shows. Like, there's the Black Wrestlers Matter shows. There's the LGBTQ plus shows that are coming out now, and like intergender shows, all women shows. And I think that's amazing, because those are just marginalized groups that have kind of been pushed aside. You know, even I think like a lot of Asian wrestlers, be it Japan, China, Korea, like, have really been not necessarily like pushed to the side, but it's never been the spotlight that I feel like we really can be. And that's I assume that's how like Black wrestlers feel, like women wrestlers feel, like everyone feels that is a marginalized group. So that's really what I want to be known as, someone that has really put his country on his back.
I think that's really awesome. And there's a lot to be said about that. We're talking with Kevin Koo here on One-on-One with John Alba. We just talked a little bit about your MLW run. It did just come to an end. You guys mutually parted ways with MLW. Why the decision to move on, and what do you anticipate to be next?
I just think that we were going in different paths. Like, me and Dom really sat down and talked about it, and we really appreciate everything MLW has done for us, because they were the first company to really put a chance on us, because we were just, you know, kind of an indie tag team that was getting some buzz, and they really gave us a chance to really be on TV and teach us a lot of stuff. So I appreciate that endlessly from Court, MSL, and everyone there. But I just think that they're starting to do some other stuff that we don't really fit into, and that's completely fine, because everyone evolves, everyone changes. So we just kind of like amicably split, and they were so amazing to us to let us out of our contracts like that. So I don't know, man, wrestling's crazy right now. You know, who would have thought that all these people would have gotten signed to like WWE, NXT, AEW, even like doing New Japan Strong now so much. It's just like, who knows what's going to happen next. So
it feels like to me, New Japan Strong is a place that would be an outstanding permanent landing spot for you for a period of time.
I would absolutely love that. I talk about it quite often that I just like all the LA Dojo guys are so handsome and I don't understand it. I'm just like, man, they're all amazing professional wrestlers and they're so handsome. I don't get it. What are they doing to the waters over there? But I watch that product all the time. And I obviously watch New Japan a lot, different types of Japanese wrestling. It's really big. It's what I enjoy to sit down and just watch as a fan, you know? So I would absolutely love it if we were able to get a chance there.
Yeah, well, Filthy's not doing too shabby over there. So there's definitely some potential room there for you to grow. Yeah. Before we wrap up here, I want to talk about some of this punk stuff. Because like I said, I think there are so many parallels between music and pro wrestling. And you did something that not a lot of people can say they've done. And that's gone on tour with bands. I've done it myself too, actually. And I'm probably not nearly as serious as you did, but that takes a huge, huge risk. What was some of the music you were listening to growing up and how'd you get into playing it?
Growing like super young, I just listened to what my sister listened to because she's like 6 years older than me. So I would always drive around with her. So it was like Backstreet Boys and shit like that.
I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Wrong with that. Right. But then as I started to like, you know, really grow my own brain, I would really start listening to more like local punk bands. Like there was this band called Plate Six from Birmingham. That was like a really awesome band. Haste was from there. Under Oath is actually they're from Florida, but also they're from Birmingham. The first singer, they did a bunch of stuff. But then I started really listening to like hardcore and like emo and indie and like Saddle Creek type bands. So that's what, and then there was a local venue in Birmingham called Cave Nine. That was the nonprofit that, you know, we would all hang out at. And I was like, why are my parents letting me come here? It's like really sketchy. And during New Year's, they would just like shoot guns in the air and all the shell cases would come down. I'm like, this is probably bad, but you know, I've never felt more safe than I was there just because it was a community. And that's what I love about punk music. It's just like a true community of people coming together.
What instrument were you playing?
I played bass. I played bass in a couple of bands, but then I sang in a couple of hardcore bands too.
So you talked about like the vulnerability of having to go out there and play. How grueling is that on the road when you're trying to make a career of things?
So the actual like tours I did, I only played bass once, and then I would be the tour manager or the merch guy. So I was essentially the babysitter for everyone. So that was a lot easier. But we would play like every other week in our hometown at Cave Nine, and singing was rough. Like I found out very quickly that I needed to get like honey, throw coat, drink tea, like all the time, do vocal warm-ups. So I was like, I didn't think that it was going to be this much, but I found out quick.
Do you find, and this is a direct personal anecdote here, do you find that there's any correlations with the high of performing in a band and performing in wrestling? Because for me, I played in a band. I toured all around the East Coast. I toured into Canada. And when I stopped playing music, that's when I started performing in pro wrestling, because it like kind of filled that performance void for me. Was that anything similar for you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, especially if you're playing in different towns, like I always assume that no one knows me when I go out and wrestle. So I always try to show who I am every single time. And I feel like that's the exact same thing with bands, because if you're the opening act, then you're like, sometimes there'll be four people there because they're like, I'm just going to come for the main act. So you have to really like, wow someone, you know? And I think that's kind of cool, because you're always trying to essentially reinvent yourself every single show.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And you get to live a dream. Like you said, that's kind of the coolest part of your journey here. You had two different dreams that you got to take part in. And that's, man, there are so many people who never take that risk on themselves in life. And you got to do both of them. Do you have any words of wisdom you'd like to pass along in that sense for maybe people who are nervous to take that risk on themselves?
If you're thinking about doing it, just do it right now. There's literally no time like the present. And I think that the past almost 3 years have taught us that. Realistically, what do you have to lose? You know, the worst that's going to happen is that you fail or someone says no, and then you're in the exact same spot you were in before you even started doing it. So just might as well do it.
Great piece of advice there, Kevin Koo, one half of Violence is Forever. And he is going to take the pro wrestling world by storm in 2022. I really do believe that, my friend. Is it true your first wrestling match, was that at IWE in Maine?
Oh, yeah, sure was.
So that's the same place I debuted in. So you and I are tied forever in that sense. We both started in the same building, Cityside Restaurant in Brewer, Maine. That, you know, that was actually, a lot of people don't know this, Sasha Banks' first title that she won in wrestling was in that building for IWE.
Which is a lot of people who have been trained by New England Pro Wrestling Academy, a lot of your first shows are in Maine, like either at a fair show or at IWE.
Isn't that crazy?
Randy Carver, who runs Limitless, announced my first ever match. It was crazy.
That is, oh, and I've got video of that, and I was trolling him the other day with that.
Wearing his really oversized suit.
I got good stories about that. But no, man, I'm excited to see you along the road this year. No doubt about that. You can check out Kevin Koo all over the internet. He's wrestling everywhere. Any plugs you want to throw out there?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, KevinXKoo. I have a Big Cartel, violenceisforever.bigcartel.com. I post, you know, my cats, what I'm doing in life on my social media. So that's where you'll find me. Hopefully you'll see me pop up somewhere else soon.
I feel pretty confident in that. I appreciate your time, my friend. I appreciate all you guys who are listening or watching One-on-One with John Alba here on adfreeshows.com. Don't forget, subscribe now to adfreeshows.com. You get access to this plus tons of other bonus content, like hundreds of hours of stuff. So go check it out right now. And we'll see you guys next time here on One-on-One with John Alba.